Those three dozen motorcycles you hear, mostly Harleys, by the way, have just rolled up outside the local town hall in Oak Springs, Arizona. Oak Springs, according to the last census, is home to 607 Navajo Indians. It sits on the largest Indian reservation in the United States. The bikers are all Native Americans who ride to honor military veterans. Here to greet them are 30 to 40 people, honoring them for the work they've done paying tribute to military veterans. They've been known to ride 3 hours to Albuquerque to escort returning Native American Iraq War veterans back to the reservation.
My son Romeo is serving in Iraq right now. He's with the 1st of the 200th Infantry from Rio Rancho, New Mexico.
What did you think about your son enlisting with this war going on?
Well, I thought he made the right decision. He's getting a lot out of it right now, and I'm just proud that he's a veteran right now.
No ethnic group in America joins the military in greater proportion than Native Americans. Like all who go off to war, many Native Americans return with psychological injuries. We've come to America's Southwest on crossing continents to find out why Native Americans join the military in such numbers and to look at some unusual solutions to the problems their veterans face. We're headed west on a two-lane highway that redefines the meaning of straight as an arrow. Rising, jutting 1,500 feet above the valley floor are tabletop mesas. It's on top of these mesas that the Hopi Indians, a pacifist nation, retreated hundreds of years ago to more easily defensible positions. The Hopis remain a very peaceful people, yet we're going to Hopi High School to talk to some young students who are enrolled in the Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps. Hopi High School provides more recruits for the U.S. military per capita than just about any high school in the United States.
Company attention!
Alpha!
I am an Army Junior ROTC cadet. I always conduct myself to bring credit to my family, country, school, and the Corps of Cadets.
We're at Hopi High School on the Hopi Indian Reservation in Keams Canyon, Arizona. And we're talking to Leandra Kalnimthawa, 17-year-old senior, and she's the battalion commander for the Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps here at Hopi High School. Why are you involved in ROTC?
For me, it's a lot of work and a lot of fun. Like, it's a lot of hands-on. That's what I like to do, what I want to be as a leader, not a follower.
Is it your intention to go on to college and join the Reserve Officer Training Corps in college?
Yes.
And that'll lead you to become an Army officer, right?
Yes, sir.
Why do you want to become an Army officer?
Just to serve the country, just to make sure that my people are safe, and as well as, like, my own family, that I'm just fighting for what I believe is right.
Now, a lot of Native Americans out here join the military, in fact, maybe twice the rate of the rest of the country. Why do you think that is?
Honestly, I kind of think because they have nothing else to do out here, because there's not really much that you can do out here, and it's kind of hard to, like, get a job. So the only resort they can go to is the Army.
My name's Jamala Makima. I'm 17 years old.
Who in your family's in the military?
Two of my uncles were in the military.
And why are you interested in joining the Army?
Honestly, it's for the money. But then at the same time, I know that if I join the Army, that it helps me fight for my people, as well as the citizens in the United States.
My name is Tasha Labahi. I'm not really planning to join the Army. I'm planning to join the Marines.
Oh. Why are you planning to join the Marines?
People look down on me because I'm small and they think I'm weak. So I want to prove myself to them that I can be stronger than what they think I can. And I want to prove to my older brothers that I can do it, and to my family too. My older brother is planning to go to the Marines too.
Aha. Will you go through a Marine ROTC program someplace?
I'm planning to go to West Point Academy if I can't make it into the Marines.
Wait until they hear at West Point that you're their second choice if you don't make it into the Marines. You say you're small and you want to prove yourself. How tall are you?
5.
Full 5 feet?
Around 5'1".
Back on the Navajo reservation, where we saw the bikers, we tracked down Irwin Garcia. He's an Iraq veteran, a former military policeman, and now a police officer on the reservation. He says it's obvious why Native Americans join the military in such great numbers.
Native Americans, they want to be warriors. They want to be noticed. It's in their blood, you know. It's being a warrior, you know. You got to experience war sometimes to make you whole as a human and protect. You know, they say United States is great and you protect your country. For us, it's for your family. You're protecting your family.
Was your company largely Native American?
My platoon was, at one time, all Native American. If it's not Navajo, it's Oklahoma tribe somewhere. We all got along, we did our job, and I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, that must have been a special experience. Were they all guys, or were there some women in the unit, too?
We had a few females. Military police, they don't segregate females and males.
And yeah. Your females are armed to the teeth, just like you were.
They're more ruthless than the guys. I would say overall, all Native Americans consider themselves one way or another as warriors. They're proud, every single one of them that I serve with. They're all proud, and they would do another tour right now. If you called their names, they'll be there.
Would you?
Yes, I would.
Garcia said he had nightmares when he first came home from Iraq. U.S. military medical authorities estimate that as many as 30% of returning Iraq war veterans suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. American military doctors are struggling to cope with the flood of patients and struggling to come to a better understanding about how to treat them. For his part, Garcia says he's fine now. It takes others longer to recover.
But one day, one of the biggest fight that happened there was back in February, I think. Went in for R&R and pulled night duties, and we got hit that night by what they call zappers.
That's Richard Anderson, a Navajo, a Marine veteran of Vietnam.
By the time it was over, within 20, 30 minutes, there was like close to 100 Marines that died, close to 1,000 kooks that we kill. They were still counting the bodies the next day.
Your unit saw a lot of combat, didn't it?
I was assigned to 17th Alpha Company, 1st Marine Division. And I guess our job was to hunt the gooks and be out there in the front, always out in the bush.
And did you find the bad guys?
We knew we would get hit early in the morning. And we knew we would get hit in the evening. I was expecting that we'd be hit. Sure enough, it would come.
On patrol, Anderson preferred to take the lead, to be the point man.
I thought at that time it was a safe place to be. But I was told that I was the first one they kill. But one time we were surrounded. They bombed the hell out of them, and we had a big firefight. We knocked out a whole division, 500 or 600 bodies was counted. Only like 50 Marines died that day.
So you got out of the service, you got out of the Marines in April of 1970, on April Fool's Day, I think you said. Yeah. Tell me about coming home.
They took us to Da Nang and to put us on the ship. I was a barber on that ship. We played cards, and it took us 19 days. I never slept, though. I couldn't sleep because you could hear those things that were happening back in Vietnam. You know, it's happening in your mind. Dream about it. Every time you close your eyes and think about all those friends you left behind, all those dead ones.
When he came home, he was suffering from PTSD. That ailment's been recognized at least since the late 19th century. It's had many names: soldier's heart, shell shock, battle fatigue. It's only since the 1980s that we've called it PTSD. It can result in debilitating depression, uncontrollable outbursts of anger, and a lot of self-medication with street drugs and alcohol.
We hit San Diego. It took us to a base. Got in trouble at the San Diego Zoo trying to feed the lion, trying to fight the apes. That was coming home. Yeah.
You ended up spending a night in jail, too.
Yeah, I ended up in jail and pissing on the Navy personnel.
So you had some money in your pocket, though, when you got out of the Marine Corps, right?
Yeah, I saved quite a bit, close to $4,000, I think.
And what'd you do with that money?
Nobody knew I was coming home. I bought a car, came home, got stuck in the snow, and the first truck over the hill was my family, my two sons. That's how I came home. Two Jack Daniels, two fifth in the car. I was drunk with a kennel.
Richard then tells me how for the next years he had a number of jobs, including several postings as a Navajo police officer. But he kept getting in trouble, usually because of drinking. He finally got better, in part thanks to a Navajo ceremony called the Blessing Way. He then went on to spend 7 years learning how to perform the ceremony himself, and now he does it for other veterans.
It took a long time to heal. Now, you know, everything's okay. I guess all this time I was sick. I was a sick man. And nobody was there to point the way. I had to find it myself.
There is some evidence to suggest that Indian veterans suffer post-traumatic stress disorder more frequently than non-Indian veterans. Why do you suppose that's the case?
I think the natives were in tune with the universe, with our surroundings. And when we get exposed to a war of enemies, you lose that balance, you lose that surrounding, you lose that support from the family. I think that's one of the main contributing factors.
Anderson performs his healing ceremonies in a traditional eight-sided structure called a hogan. Here he helps Native Americans reconnect severed ties to their families, their community, their tribe. Academics say those ties are an essential part of a Native American's identity. Anderson's hogan is well off the beaten path. But now Native American healing ceremonies are becoming available in big city hospitals, hospitals run by the government for veterans.
There are veterans' hospitals to the east and to the west of the Navajo Reservation. Neither are particularly close. Today we're headed to Prescott, and to give you some idea of the distances involved, it's going to be a half day's drive. We're driving through extremely beautiful country. It's flat desert, red-rimmed mountains bordering it. But in the midst of this stunning beauty, we find the isolated homes of the Navajo. In many cases, mobile homes, other cases, run-down wooden structures, many of them without electricity and many of them without running water. And all of them a great distance from anything like a grocery or a gas station, conveniences that urban people take absolutely for granted. That's Albert Laughter, a fifth-generation Navajo Indian medicine man. He's in a white teepee about 25 feet in diameter. A small fire of cedar logs burns on the ground in the center, its aromatic smoke curling through the opening at the teepee's peak. The teepee is on the grounds of a hospital in Prescott, run by the Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA. Many of the buildings here date back to the mid-19th century when, ironically, this was an army fort during the Indian Wars. Today, Albert Laughter will lead a traditional talking circle, which is a form of group therapy with an added spiritual dimension.
Albert and the three veterans are wearing long ankle-length shawls, blue on one side, red on the other. The veterans are using eagle feathers to pull the smoke towards them, and making sure that the aromatic smoke is
on their hair, on their legs, on their body. And this veteran is doing it with his bare hand.
Introduce yourself, and we're going to be talking about ourselves, our mind, where we're at spiritually. So we're going to pass the feather around. From there, we put some more cedar on. We actually cleansing ourselves, cleansing our mind.
My name is Larry Kimmel. My given name is Brave Coyote. I'm of the Miami Tribe of Indians of Indiana. And today, we are gathered here in this circle with the fire, the beginning. Aho, Matakia.
My name is Ed Albert. Mother's maiden name is Shonico. Cherokee from Oklahoma and North Carolina. Vietnam veteran.
When the ceremony was finished, I spoke with some of the veterans. They were all Vietnam veterans, as it happens. I asked Ed Albert, the Cherokee, how many Vietnam tours he did.
Just one. That was enough.
Did you get wounded?
Yeah, twice.
When you came home, how was life for you?
I started drinking and then doing drugs and, you know, all that kind of junk, I guess, just to wash it away until I met a lady a couple years afterwards, and she kind of set me on my feet.
What do these ceremonies that Albert Laughter performs mean to you?
They mean the world to me. They've kept me going during a lot of hard times.
Larry, how many tours in Vietnam did you do?
Two tours, back to back.
And how was coming home for you?
I felt like I was alone. You know, you live with each other over there in Nam, and you watch each other's backs, and you live in the same foxhole night after night after night, and then you come home, and those guys aren't around. I didn't have anybody to talk to, so I kind of isolated myself. I felt like I was the only one that survived.
What do these ceremonies mean to you?
They bring me closer to my inner spirit and closer to the Creator.
It seems to have brought you some peace.
Yes, it has, very much so. I had lost contact, even though it was back in my mind for years, that I was of a descendantry of Native American. I really didn't get in touch with this inner self of mine until I met Ed.
I'm assuming that along the way you had conventional psychotherapy for your post-traumatic stress disorder. How does that compare in terms of the benefits that you feel, the help you get through these traditional medicine man ceremonies?
I've had both. I've had what we call the Wachichu, which is white man and it's Lakota, treatment, their medicine. I've also had the Native American medicine, the healing sweats, TP healing ceremonies, warrior ceremonies, and they both have their benefits. I am on white man's medicine. I do take the medications, but the Native American medicine intensifies it. It reinforces what I had been feeling in the past. I've got brothers that I can talk to. They've been through the same thing.
The doctor here at the Prescott Veterans Affairs Hospital, who's responsible for what Larry called white man's medicine, is psychologist David D. Farrow. He and others in the VA system are overwhelmed by the new flood of Iraq veterans with PTSD. And Farrow admits that care for Native Americans in particular is inadequate. Part of that has to do with the sheer scale of the geography out here. The Navajo Reservation is three times the size of Wales. Farrow said the VA has tried to put small clinics on the reservations.
The people are dispersed throughout a huge land area. So putting one in a particular area may not be as efficient a way to deliver services. Then where do you put it? And there was probably some political resistances because, you know, one tribe would want it on their land as opposed to another. And with the Hopi come to a clinic that was on Navajo land, there certainly have been, you know, issues between the tribes, although they cooperate in many other ways.
Albert Laughter and some of the other medicine men who are working with veterans using traditional Native American healing ceremonies, Are they helping?
There are many people who strongly prefer traditional approaches. And to the extent that that allows us to access those persons, that is one very positive thing. Albert is very helpful in helping us. He's trusted. He can get people to come in for treatment. They may first go through ceremonies, but if there's problems that we can address, like alcoholism and so forth, you know, he can get them into treatment and keep them in treatment by continuing to provide them with traditional services. That's a very important role. In my own interactions with veterans, there are many of them who will tell me that the ceremonies are extremely important to them, that that is a healing type of experience for them. Many of the ceremonies, I could explain how they may be helpful from other points of view using Western ideas, but who am I to explain that away using Western concepts?
Is there anything to be learned from the Native practitioner and their approach to curing PTSD that can carry over into the treatment of non-Indians?
Many, many of our non-Indian veterans really like the ceremonies that we perform, the talking circles and the teepee. That's not very different from a group therapy. Many people feel very comfortable with it. There's some prayers there. They do some specialized kinds of blessings and things. Everyone can participate in anything that we support.
But Veterans Affairs, not a famously flexible or innovative bureaucracy, has begun innovative programs to reach Native Americans. Those programs originated at hospitals near reservations, not in Washington. A full day's drive east from Prescott, past places like Two Gun, Bloody Basin, and the Petrified Forest, we went to Albuquerque, New Mexico. There's another VA hospital in Albuquerque. Like an increasing number of others scattered around the U.S., the hospital in Albuquerque now has a sweat lodge. The sweat lodge on the grounds at the Albuquerque VA hospital is inside a 6-foot-high cedar fence. The whole space is about the size of a tennis court. And sitting in the middle of it is a sweat lodge, which looks a bit like a geodesic dome made with willow branches as the skeleton. It's about 10 feet in diameter, and it's about 5.5 feet tall. Right now, the exterior is covered with black plastic, but during the ceremonies, that would then be covered with blankets. And with us is Kara Kellogg, the social worker here. Tell me what goes on out here when they have a sweat ceremony.
Well, this area is committed to the Native American members of the Talking Circle group that meet in this area twice a month for them to meet as a group and talk about any issues that they want to process related to veteran experience, PTSD, and current issues. The forum is pretty open. And then the last half of the group is dedicated to them for sweat ceremonies, should they choose to have sweat ceremonies.
Kara, we're right adjacent to Kirtland Air Force Base, and we can hear jets taking off in the background. Does that have any impact on these veterans, the noise of these military aircraft?
It absolutely does. It's a factor in their PTSD when we meet out here. Re-experiencing symptoms arise for many of them when they hear aircraft. We take up that issue when it arises.
Let's describe the mechanics of it here. Outside this geodesic dome-shaped sweat lodge, there's a big hole in the ground. What happens here?
There's a wood fire that's built in this hole. And then rocks, preferably lava rocks, are placed on top of the fire for sometimes up to 4 hours, so they become very, very hot, and the lava rocks hold the heat very well. And then those rocks are moved into the sweat lodge itself, where they're placed in a pit in the middle of the lodge, and then water is poured over the rocks, and then steam is created in there, and that is what the sweat ceremony is all about.
Along with the sweat lodge, mainstream treatments like psychotherapy and medication are available here, too. Psychologist Dr. James Gillis specializes in PTSD, and he told us why the Native American veterans believed it was important to have both the conventional white man's medicine and the traditional Indian approach. Gillis explained the value of sweat lodges.
Sweating is a traditional sacred activity that symbolically represents a purification, a cleansing. on the physical side, this has the benefits of, say, spending an hour or two in a sauna. On the psychological and spiritual side, this represents a whole lot more. There are things that are said in the lodge that are not said elsewhere, and it gives them this ritual cleansing that is very important. And it also is a symbolic return to the womb of the Mother Earth. So it is a very important ritual for them that has benefits that we can't fully quantify.
Is it working? Are you helping these patients?
I really believe we are. I see it in their faces. I see the changes in them. I see one veteran at a time getting hooked in terms of more social connection, seeing the quality of his life improve. I think that at some point we will have numbers to really support that.
Up north in Canada, scientists have numbers. They've studied the impact sweat lodges have on emotional well-being, and while they don't really know why, they can measure improvements in people who take part. We're ending this odyssey back where we began, at Oak Springs on the Navajo Reservation in Arizona. We're at the community center. Native Americans may join the military mostly to get a good job, but they end up fighting and dying just the same. And if veterans who aren't Indians never get a chance to take a sweat or receive a Navajo blessing ceremony, there are other things to be learned in how we treat mental health problems. At the risk of sounding corny, when Native American veterans return, it's to a combination of good old small-town American patriotism and Indian tradition. Call it community, if you will. And this day in Oak Springs, that unique American sense of community and patriotism was pretty well wrapped up in one compact little 14-year-old girl who sang the American National Anthem in Navajo.